truly wish I could have just seen y'all guys' faces. I wish I could have seen you guys' faces. I know that just unlocked a core memory in some of you. At grandma's house. Can't go outside yet. All of a sudden you hear that little tune and you know you're about to be inside for a little while. Anyway, I wanted to mention this again, just in case this doctrine is still prevalent in the community or in the assembly. And it's about doing feast days. There is an issue with the Israelite community of now coming out with a doctrine that said that we don't have to do the feast days because we are not in the promised land, or we're not in the land of our forefathers. And here's the issue with that. There is nowhere in scripture, absolutely nowhere, that says that we should nitpick when we should do the feast days. If the feast days are a part of the Torah, then we do the feast days and we do the Torah regardless of where we are at. It is mentioned in prophecy that we would remember ourselves in the land of our captivity and we will return to the Most High. Even in Malachi, the Most High says, if you return unto me, I will return unto you. He even goes further and says, you have robbed me. And then he says that we would say, where have we robbed you? He said, well, in tithes and offerings. So if you believe that we aren't supposed to do the feast days because we're not in the promised land, that means you're not doing anything. That means you are not separating yourself, as I mentioned in Exodus, making yourself a difference or making yourself set apart from other religions or people of the land. So you simply just, oh, I'm an Israelite, but you're doing no works. You're not doing anything to prove that you are following the Father. Even in the book of John, where it says, guard the commandments, guard the commandments, guard the commandments. You trying to tell me he wants us to guard every commandment except for the feast days? The feast days which are important to the Most High Yah? Especially when the very first feast day, which was Pesach, and it was not in our land, but it was the first institution of this feast day. We did it away from our land. And what do you think that he's going to ask for us or expect of us when it comes to the second Exodus? When you believe or think that the Exodus, second one, would be around Pesach as well? When you would almost believe that, right? I mean, I don't see it being on the Feast of Shavuot that we just be let out of here, or the Feast of Sukkot and we're let out of here. It would be truly poetic. And I'm not trying to pretend like I know Yah or understand his ways, because he could do whatever he want. But I would like to prepare and think that the second Exodus, since it's much like the first Exodus, would be around the same time. And he would expect us to do the same exact thing that he asked of his children the first time they did it. Now, here is the only doctrine I've seen that they tried to validate. Well, we don't need to do the feast days because we're not in our land, is in Daniel 10. And I've talked about this before. Again, like I said, I'm bringing it back up again. It says, in the third year of Koresh, king of Persia, a thing was revealed unto Daniel, whose name was called Belteshazzar. And the thing was true, but the time appointed was long. And he understood the thing had understanding of the vision. In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning 3 full weeks. I ate no pleasant bread, neither came flesh nor wine in my mouth, neither did I anoint myself at all till 3 whole weeks were fulfilled. And if you do those 3 full weeks, it was around Pesach that he chose not to do Pesach. And mind you, it says, in those days, I, Daniel, was mourning 3 full weeks. And just because you don't eat pleasant bread or any flesh comes to your mouth or any wine to your mouth and you did not anoint yourself, you trying to tell me he didn't sit at a dinner table or he wasn't in the vicinity of where other Israelites were doing the Pesach? You could do the Pesach and say, well, I'm not going to eat. I'm not going to participate in eating because I'm mourning. which is rightfully so because he's in captivity. Why would he want to do a Pesach, which is a feast day about being let out, if he's in captivity? Would we do the Pesach? And if we knew who we were, if we were in captivity in that 400 year of affliction, I think most of us wouldn't. We wouldn't feel like, oh, we're about to be released out of Egypt. We were in Egypt, second Egypt. So it has to come with some understanding of why Daniel himself, that's it, Daniel, not everybody else, Daniel felt the need not to observe the Pesach. But we don't know if he didn't observe the Pesach. He could have prayed to the Most High, said, oh, you know, sorry, Yah, I'm not eating, you know, the Passover lamb. I'm not drinking wine. I'm not doing the offerings. We don't know that. It just says in Daniel 10 that he was mourning for 3-4 weeks. And it says in the third year of Koresh. We don't know if Daniel did this the second year or the first year or the year that he was in captivity. We don't know this. And Israelites going to these verses and saying, oh, because Daniel didn't do it, we don't have to do it. But if you go to Ezra, third Ezra, which you can go for yourself if you have the Sefer, you can search Pesach, captivity, and it will come up with third book of Ezra. And the Israelites who were in captivity were able to go to Jerusalem, some of them, not all of them, some of them, who were in captivity, and they still did the Pesach. It even says the children of Yashareel of the captivity did Pesach. Now, I don't know if everybody, I don't think while they were in captivity that everybody was allowed to just go to Jerusalem and come back. I'm sure he let some people go to tend to the temple, and then most of the Israelites that remained behind to still do Pesach. But I know they did it not in their land. But there's nowhere else that we are called to only nitpick of what commandments we are supposed to do and we're not supposed to do just because we're not in the land of our forefathers. That makes no sense to me. But again, you Israelites will just make up doctrine on top of doctrine just so you don't have to do something. And I don't know if you, because your money is short or you're not organizing like you thought you could organize. Because most people use these feast days for their own idol, for their own worship of themselves. It's seeing how many people or Israelites they can bring together and bring food in and do this and do that and make it seem like they are running the community or they are head of the assembly. Maybe after a while you get tired of doing it. I don't know. Because if you get tired of doing these feast days, you're not doing them for the right causes. You're not doing it for Yah, you're doing it for yourself. And you're trying to kid yourself by just jumping into another doctrine that says, oh, we ain't supposed to do them because we're not in the promised land. Anyway, I wanted to get to this brother's comment. I know he commented 2 episodes ago about the phrase swore 7 oaths. If you're reading the Sefer, you would also see this change. It went from just oaths to I'm swearing 7 oaths. I don't know Yah to be a man that has catchphrases or just saying words without a meaning. Now, I haven't read anywhere in Scripture that denotes these 7 oaths when it uses that phrase, I swore 7 oaths to this, I swore 7 oaths to that. It's heavily in the book of Judges, but it's heavily all throughout the Old Testament. I swore 7 oaths, I swore 7 oaths, I swear 7 oaths. But I haven't read yet what these oaths are as far as the breakdown. Now, did he swear 7 oaths to Abraham, Isaac, and Yaakov, or Yashareel? Like, I don't know. But as I said before, Yah doesn't strike me as someone who would just be saying catchphrases for no reason. So mind you, we also don't have our own history. We don't have our own language. We are still blind to these things. So we don't have the original copies of anything. We're also relying on the European to translate. And they're translating our history the way they see fit. This is another thing that just pisses me off. That we are learning our history from our enemies. And we're not allowed to learn the history for ourselves or learn our language for ourselves. Like, I haven't seen, just maybe because it's me, I haven't seen any great teachers that can teach Paleo Hebrew. I mean, I've seen brothers and sisters that do a couple of lessons here and there, but not in a way that it's like a first grade, like it's kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade type of education of how we learn English here. I don't see that. I haven't seen that yet. Maybe if y'all know people who are good at teaching it and have a page good at teaching, I just haven't seen it yet. Please drop it in the comment section so I can check it out. So to answer that, brother, I don't know. I don't know why all of a sudden it says swear seven oaths. Maybe they seen the translation or maybe they made the translation up themselves. I don't know. To go with what I said in the episode before, Brother Matt's episode about fatherhood or men of honor, read, if you have a child or if you're expecting a child and that child is in the womb, you read to your son Jubilees 21 and start at verse 3 and down. You should read, I read that to my son. You should read that to your son. Jubilees 21. And I'm just going to read verse 3 because I feel like you should read this on your own. It says, my soul has hated idols, given my heart and my ruach that I might observe to do the will of him who created me. That is a powerful statement or a powerful verse to start off with. I'll do 4. For he is the living Elohim, and he is holy and faithful. He is righteous beyond all, and there is with him no accepting of men's persons and no accepting of gifts. For Elohim is righteous and executes judgment on all those who transgress his commandment and despise his covenant. So there you go. There you go. That's the end of it. That's the end of the doctrine of we ain't supposed to do the feast days. Because we're not in our land. There you go. You despise his covenant when you do that. And do you, my son, observe his commandments and his ordinances and his judgments, and walk not after the abominations and after the graven images and after the molten images. That's, like I said, read that to your son. Even if you have your son that says a newborn or he's 1, he's 2 or 3, you should read this verse like you reading a bedtime story to him every night. Because it's almost sounding like it's coming from you. But this is coming from Father Abraham. But it sounds like it's going to come from you. I like that first, that third verse. My soul has hated idols, given my heart and ruach, that I might observe to do the will of him who created me. And who knows? Maybe your son grows up and is like, who created us, Father? Why do you hate the idols so much? What will are we observing? Then the conversation goes to you really rearing up your child in the way that he should go. I think that's beautiful. Also in Daniel that I was rereading, it talked about time. And I think I got a kind of confirmation of people not understanding that it's the Most High that changed the phases of the moon or change time for his will or his purpose. Daniel 2 verse 19 through 22. Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the Elohai of heaven. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of Elohai forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changes the times and the seasons. And he removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. He reveals the deep and secret things. He knows what it is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. Verse 21 says, and he changes the times and the seasons. So when they talk about Enoch, that times will speed on. Matiyahu, time will be shortened. Ezra and Baruch, the years will speed on rapidly. This is the Most High changing times and seasons for his purpose and will. So that's why in Jubilees, when it says like, it will be those who observe that the moon comes in 10 days too soon. This is the Most High changing times, changing the moon, speeding up time to save his elect. Because if he does not speed up time, then no flesh would be saved. So there it is. I'm not going to try to fix what Yah has done. I'm only going to observe what he has done. I'm going to observe his power. Why would I correct his power by trying to force 364 days and put it on a solar-only calendar, losing all of the new moon Shabbats? There it is. I have laid out chapter and verse of all of the new moons and how they make sense under all the scriptures that I found based on the new moons and what is categorized as the first day. Now, if you despise this covenant, that's something between you and Yah. I'm no longer going to keep fighting y'all over little stuff. You do what you want. I like that the fact that Brother Ron Charles over at Truth said people want to know more about Satan, his devices, his tricks, than actually want to know about the word. He said people just want to know so much about what Satan is doing. His little tricks, his little numerology, his little plans, his little rituals, his little psyops. People fill themselves with that. I mean, it's knowledge, but it's after a while, you move on. After a while, you just don't care. After a while, you're trying to seek the Father more. You're trying to seek out Satan's ways. And because the conversation has poured into more people wanting to know about Satan more than they want to know about Yah, because knowing about Satan, you don't truly have to change who you are. You don't have to change how you live this life. I know truthers or conspiracy theorists, they do exactly what they've been doing with the knowledge that Yah has provided because of that prophecy of I will pour out my ruach upon all flesh, all flesh. So I've seen what people are doing with Yah's ruach. Some people are breaking down movies, whether they make them funny or not. People are breaking down and dissecting movies. On top of movies, on top of movies. There's people who are dissecting Hollywood, the symbolism. And it don't matter at the end of the day, because it only matters if did you serve the Most High Yah or did you serve yourself and trying to figure out what Satan is doing. People are trying to seek and know Satan more than they're trying to seek and know Yah, because seeking to know Yah, you have to change some things. Your habits have to stop. You can still do coke, go to parties and clubs, and then still break down all the symbolism. You can still do that. You can still be a liar. You can still be a thief. You can still cheat. You can still be an adulterer and still break down Satan's devices, symbolisms, and numerology. It don't take much. It really don't take much obedience to break that down if you just pay attention and understand pattern recognition. But when it comes to serving the Most High Yah, you have to change some things, a lot of things. And it's usually just your personality, things that you're used to doing, your survival tactics. That's stuff you change. Naturally, you change. No one stays the same in this walk. I mean, you could fight to do it, but you're only hurting yourself. No one stays the same in this walk. You could stay the same exposing Satan. You truly can. Like, there's no growth to that. Like, it's a couple of pages I follow. It's just they're not growing. Now their engagement is dropping because they're not growing. They're not taking you somewhere. And I said this before on my Instagram. You have to be in a position to take your people somewhere. If this is about saving souls and all that, and mind you, we don't have the power to save anybody. But you want to feed them something. You want to feed the flock. You want to feed the assembly. You want to take them somewhere. You want to give them enough food for them to sustain themselves if they leave your page or if you leave their podcast. You want to take them somewhere, but you can't keep them in the same spot, looking at the same celebrities, breaking down the same symbolisms, breaking down the same checkerboard patterns. Like, yeah, I go here and there, but only just to expose that these things are connected. Like LeBron James walking around on a wedding with this Rabbi Shintu. Hand in hand, which is an embarrassment. I don't care. He put shades on to hide himself. That's embarrassment. They see that as embarrassment. I used to wear shades in nightclubs and all that. And I always wonder Did it make me look cool, or was I hiding what I didn't want people to know about me? And that's usually it was the latter. I was hiding because I didn't want people to know about me. You know, I said the eyes is the window to the soul. You in dark places and you dark yourself. You want to stay dark. You don't want any light, whether it be false light, strobe light, club light. You would rather stay dark. So the fact LeBron had these shades on, it shows the embarrassment that he had to walk hand in hand with somebody that's like 5'8", 5'5", a rabbi who really doesn't mean nothing in the scheme of things, walking around before he got that Nike deal. And then you see Kanye West as awkward, and when you hear his humble voice, he sound white. He don't even sound black to me. Look up the video. You just hear him, you be like, that ain't Kanye, because you're so used to hearing him rap. It's almost like Drake. When you hear Drake's inside voice, or you hear Drake's normal voice, you be like, ain't no way this dude is black. But when you hear him put on a different outfit, when you see them put on a different person, a different ego, or alter, they sound like everybody else. Which is why Satan picks these people, because their ability to act, ability to masquerade. So Kanye West sat down and talked to this guy and saying he was sorry. I said this before, they all have to say sorry. And he said sorry about 4 times already. But somehow people fell into this whole, he's a Christian. Fell into, oh, let's worship him because he's finding his way. Like, oh, don't judge him because, you know, God knows his heart. And I try to warn people about him. But I was looking like the hater because I was exposing him. And then now look. Like, it all comes out. People just not patient. If it all eventually comes out, they all eventually show you exactly who they are. In the end, they do. And it's embarrassing for people who follow him, because now they stay silent. Now they don't want to see the truth. I got a homeboy in New York. Loves Kanye. Oh, he swears by Kanye. Man, that's why I love Kanye. When Kanye was exposing Jews, oh, I love Kanye. Kanye's the man. Kanye this, Kanye that. Then I showed him that video of Kanye sitting down and apologizing to some random rabbi. He said, man, this can't be real. It can't be. It got to be fake. It's got to be AI. This is what I love about this generation, is when they don't want to face the truth, it got to be fake. It got to be AI. And then here come Young Thug. He did the same exact thing. He came and met with the same rabbi in the same room. It's embarrassing. But Young Thug has came out and said that he was a Mason. And that's why he beat all his cases. He's admitted that. Now you could Google that. So these people are laughable. The same thing with, before I get back to what I want to get back to, since I'm on somewhat of celebrities, of Tom Brady cloning a dog. Now, Tom Brady cloning a dog, or now he went from cloning a dog to having his blood cloned 23 years ago. Now, mind you, the Most High has power, and he's not going to allow a man to have that much power. They may try to attempt to do what the Most High can do, but at the end of the day, they are not the Most High. Of course, they can come out with all these movies about cloning, like they clone Tyrone and thinking, oh, they can clone a human being. But here's the thing. You can't really clone something that has a soul and a ruach attached to it. And then also, why would they want to clone a person? Whether if this person is the Most High can sustain anybody, like it says in Daniel as well, that he rules in the kingdom of men. And he will set up even the basest of men for his will on his purpose. And it said this twice, that Most High rules in the kingdom of men. The Most High will choose who he wants to run these countries. And if the Most High has the power to do that, then the Most High has the power to sustain these leaders. Why would they need to clone them? People think Hillary Clinton's dead, and this person that you see is Hillary Clinton is a clone. But why? Why would the Most High just judge this woman before her time? Why would he judge her and then let the Rockefeller, I don't know if it's not Nelson or I forgot what Rockefeller was that had like about 3 or 4 heart transplants. And he was successful in all those heart transplants. And eventually he just died. The same thing with the queen. She died. Why didn't they clone her? And I'm pretty sure she's been dead before the time they announced it, because they have to announce, which this family is in, drenched with Nazism and Freemasonry. They had to put it on a numerical day. Why didn't they just clone her? I feel like this is somebody they would want to clone. Why didn't they clone Betty White and allow her to reach 100 years and then she could have died. People think, oh, they cloned Joe Biden. Maybe he just got a facelift, fam. Because if you look at his face, you can see the marks where he had a facelift, where it was pulled back. You know, they do surgeries. If they was cloning, why would they need to do facial surgeries? If they were cloning, why would they need to let us watch celebrities age over time, where you can notice that their face is changing? People live in this system and it's moving so fast that people don't think people age. Because they stay the same. They're in their, 20s and 30s. And all of a sudden you saw somebody who was in their 30s jump to their 40s and be like, oh, it must be a clone. Like Johnny Depp was one that people thought he was a clone because the way he was acting. But it was just MK Ultra. They're not cloning no Tyrone. They ain't cloning nobody. They could clone an animal because an animal does not have a soul. It doesn't have a ruach. It's basically cloning an inanimate object, but it's living. But I don't think they can clone human beings like that. Because where is the Ruach going to come from? And why would Satan want to clone human beings anyway? If he hates humans, he would want that human to attach all types of wickedness and sin to his soul so that he doesn't have an scapegoat. Because that's the only way that you would use a clone, is to bring it out in public view and allow them to absorb the sins of the person who they cloned. Like I said before, your Ruach needs to go to hell. There is no Ruach in a clone because the Most High gives the Ruach to us. But to this whole dog thing, and it made me think of 2 Baruch chapter 13, verses 8 through 12. You will say to them, ye who have drunk the strained wine, drink ye also of his dregs. The judgment of the lofty one, who has no respect of persons. On this account, he had aforetime no mercy on his own sons, that's us, but afflicted them as his enemies because they sinned. Aforetime no mercy on his own sons, but afflicted them as his enemies because they sinned. Then, therefore, were they chastened that they might be sanctified. But now, ye peoples and nations, ye are guilty because ye have always trodden down the earth and used the creation unrighteously. For I have always benefited you, and ye have always been ungrateful for the benefits. Beneficence. Most I say unto these other nations and peoples, because my children fell and I punished my children, I put them through multiple captivities and a longer captivity of 400 years, and I afflicted them as enemies. And because of this, you grew in power, you grew in wealth, you grew in riches. And see, this goes back to what I posted on my Instagram when I said white supremacy is truly not supreme and has never been supreme. None of these nations have ever been supreme ever. They only are the way they are because we fell. That is it. When we lost our crown, we lost our wealth, we lost our way. All the other nations benefited from that through our captivity. We worked for free, or we worked for no money at all. We worked for little money at that. We were sharecroppers. We were indentured servants. We were slaves. We were bondmen. We were sold as cattle. We weren't redeemed with money. There is no reparations. We didn't get anything out of it. And then even when we tried to re-enter and assimilate into the countries and assimilate into the nations where we were led captive, We were only used for entertainment, used to sell liquor, used to sell clothes. This is the only way they were able to get a foot over top of us. But I also said that this was an act of Yah. But in that act of Yah, in that punishment, it was less than 100 years. Less than 100 years. When we came out of captivity, we opened up multiple Black Wall Streets. You don't do this with a people who are born to be slaves. You don't do this. You couldn't do this. Even in the curse of Yah, even in the prophecy of disobedience and the affliction that he caused on us, we were still able to create Black Wall Streets, economic wealth in our communities. And the Most High found out and like, nope, I told them, I want them afflicted. I do not want them to rest on their own power. I do not want them to use their talent, use their ruach that I gave them to serve themselves. I want them to serve these people, and I want them to be trodden down, and I want them to be afflicted so they can come back to me and not leave me again. So, like I said, it is very powerful for us to understand this and stop saying white supremacy this and white supremacy that. Truly, it has never been supreme. And because of this, these nations and these people, through trodden down the earth and using the creation unrighteously, gonna really have to drink also of his dregs and this as judgment. They're gonna drink it. They're gonna drink every drop of it. So in them making themselves prideful and boastful and egotistical about, oh, we, you know, I've seen this online already, especially on X, that now white women are coming out and say they're proud to be in white, and white, you know, I love being white. I'm beautiful and white. I'm a professional white person. Like, I've seen it all online, and people going with it. People, they are truly enjoying. And this is what it has to be. It has to be this way. I don't even get upset about it anymore. I just laugh. Because they're playing into the hands of Scripture. But anyway, that's the whole thing about the whole cloning of a dog. They're just using creation unrighteously. And the Most High is sick of it. He's not going to afflict them in the way to afflict us, like he sanctified us. He's not in it. He's not coming back. Yahushua's not coming back to sanctify these sinners. It was already told to sinners, like, look, you choose life or death. I think the Most High knew what they were going to do, because he's mentioned that in Jubilees. The children of Esau, the children of Ishmael, and the rest of these nations, he said that he knew them, which is why he didn't choose them. He chose them not. He chose them not. He said, I didn't choose them not because they were the children of Abraham. I chose them not because I knew them. So he knows that he's not going to give them 125 years to get it right. He knows. He knows they're not going to get it right in 50 years. He's just going to allow them to do whatever they need to do for his purpose and his will to bring everything together so they can build up the second Tower of Babel spiritually, this one world government, and so he can wipe it out. He knows they're not going to turn from their wickedness. And some of you who are Gentiles from these nations, you are so lucky. You are truly called. You are truly called out. Because Most High says, this world he made was for many, and the world to come is for few. For Esau is the end of the world, and Yaakov is the beginning of it that follows. It's no more religion, no more Christianity, no more Judaism, no more Islam, no more Kemet, no more New Age spirituality. It's all, and everyone attached to it, is going to be wiped away down the drain. That is it. And he's not going to give you so much time like, oh, okay, now that you know my truth, let me resurrect you and you can relive in the truth that I laid out before to my children. It ain't happening. And I mention that because I seen for the first time that Book of Clarence, if anybody has else seen it. And there's one thing that stood out to me at the end of that movie is that after Clarence basically blasphemed all through it, that he understood the power of the Most High Yah by walking in the steps of Yahushua, walking and giving his life by trying to do it right. Now, he lived a duality. He was doing good while doing bad at the same time, which is a Freemasonic doctrine. It's the reason why Sean Carter, Jay-Z, was the executive producer of this. The same guy who directed this was the guy who directed the Netflix movie, The Harder They Fall. So, Freemasonry. And at the end, Yahushua, the guy who's playing Yahushua, comes back and resurrects Clarence. And so, okay, now that you understood that you try to do this good while doing bad, you understand, you now understand my life and my purpose and my walk because you've seen the miracles of the Most High God in yourself when he did this whole walking across water. So this is what Satanists believe. This is what Luciferians believe. They want you to believe that you can live this life being good and bad at the same time. And then when you die, you are resurrected after Satan is resurrected after 1,000 years, and you all leave hell for to get it right this time, because now you've seen how it is. Now you've seen the understanding of who the Most High Yah is and who Yahushua is. Now you get another chance that the Most High is so merciful that he will bring you up out of hell when he releases Satan out of hell for after 1,000 years, and you will reign along with Satan. That's what they truly teach and believe. I watched this old video. I can't think of the guy who said it, but he had multiple books, and he talked about the things that in the end times, Satan was going to teach Christians. And it was the doctrine of convincing them that everybody will be in heaven, that eventually the Most High will forgive those who are in hell. And I know this guy has to be a true statement, because my mother came to me and asked me, he said, do you think that when everybody's in hell for a time and they learn their lesson, that the Most High Yah will forgive them, show forgiveness and mercy, and then not allow anybody to dwell in hell anymore, and allow them to now understand that he has the power to punish, that he is who he say he is, and now they can be good people, or demonstrate now they can be good people. And I wonder why she, I'm gonna ask her after this, wonder why she wanted to know that. And it has to be because of a doctrine that she's heard in either in church or one of these pastors that she's listened to online said this. So it must be a true thing. So that's what they want you to believe, that you can live a duality life, a dual life. And because you don't know the Most High, or because you haven't tried to seek out the Most High, because you've been doing double-minded stuff, that when you actually see the power of him in your judgment, that, oh, okay, now I get it. He will resurrect me because now I know him now. No, that ain't how it's going to work. You better be seeking him and then hoping through your works for him that he can open his eyes to you and continue to teach you and educate you or edify you. And then that's how you know him. This is exactly how we know him. We know him because we came to him, hat in hand, on our knees, crying. And then he has put his hand upon us and led us to the proper way. So after that, me watching that movie for the first time was, I was like, ah, this is why they did that at the end. Another thing I wanted to bring up, since I was still on Daniel, was when he was giving, the prophecy about the kingdoms that were going to fall, the kings that were made of, you know, gold, brass, iron, and iron mixed with clay. I'll start at Daniel 2, 44 and 45. And in the days of these kings shall the Elohim of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever, which is us, Yahusha's kingdom. For as much as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great Elohai has made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. Now the first part of that verse of 45. For as much as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands. Now, if we go to Exodus 20, 24 to 26, it says, an altar of earth you shall make unto me. You shall sacrifice thereon your ascending smoke offerings, your peace offerings, your sheep, your oxen, and all the places where I have record my name. I will come unto you and I will bless you. And if you will make an altar of stone, you shall not build it of hewn stone. For if you lift up your tool upon it, you have polluted it. Neither shall you go up by the steps unto my altar, that your nakedness be not discovered thereon. But really concentrating on verse 25. And if you will make me an altar of stone, you shall not build it of hewn stone. For if you lift up your tool upon it, you have polluted. So if you go back to, Daniel 2, verse 45, and the stone that was cut out without hands, that means there was no tool lifted upon it, which means it's the Most High that's going to break these pieces, break these kingdoms into pieces. It won't be a man that does it per se. I mean, Yah and Yahusha are one, and not talking about the Holy Trinity one. I'm talking about it's Yah's doing, Yahusha's doing, it's their doing. That no man from earth will break these pieces apart. This is the Most High telling you. It is going to be His will, His power, His way that these kingdoms will be broken apart. That is, no man can stand in front of Yah and say, I'll do it for you. It's not going to be any nation that said, I'm going to do it for you. That's why the Most High is saying, or that's why He's emphasizing in Daniel, He says this not once, but twice, that a stone which was cut out of the mountain without hands, this is mentioned twice in the same chapter. So if He doesn't want us to lift a tool upon a stone that's made for an altar, showing that we're building our altar specifically of Yah's creation, that it also is Yah's creation and His will for Him to destroy these kingdoms at once or over time. That He truly is the most powerful being in this entire universe, above and below the firmament. These little things I love when you pour through scripture, you see why He does and says the things that He says and does. Which is why the Most High don't waste words. So it strikes me as odd that the Most High would say swear seven oaths and not actually label out what those seven oaths are. But if you read scripture enough, you can see line upon line, precept upon precept, here or there, here a little and there a little. You can see why He mentions and wants things done a specific way, or why He does things a specific way. And most people don't understand this because they're reprobates. You know, at the end of the day, they're reprobates. And that doesn't just mean Satanists and Luciferians. And I think people have a crazy misconception of what a reprobate is. A reprobate is anybody who's doing anything obscene or unrighteous or wicked without the understanding or the covenant or the Torah of the Most High Yah. So that's why I love watching this Donald Trump presidency. It's only been literally not even 1 year. We haven't even completed a year of this presidency. And it's been Israel, 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 Israel. That's what it's been. This first year of Donald Trump's presidency, you've seen Israel take over this nation in less than a year, less than 12 months. You've seen their people, you've seen their speeches, you've seen their rituals, their psyops, you've seen their control over this entire nation in less than 11 months. They must have been chomping at the bit. They so excited, they saying anything and everything at these little speeches, at these little conventions. And they having conventions of assemblies that you have never even heard of. Like, I didn't even know there was like a Republican convention for Israel. Like, I didn't even know that. I mean, you know that they had AIPAC. But you start seeing conventions out of the Republican Party of Israel, and they're having these speeches about how they're the best and how they're good and how the world's going to need them, and how they need to, the entire world needs to bow down to them, and how the Americans need to stop being anti-Semites because all of a sudden the right side, there's anti-Semites. Like that don't even make sense, because where did this come from? Where did the right start being anti-Semitic? Because they bring up Tucker Carlson, whose father was in the CIA, and obviously he is a Freemasonic puppet. Like, people don't see this because they're reprobate in mind. People don't see what's going on around them. And right now they're trying to run into every little rabbit hole that Candace Owens is laying out to steer themselves away from the truth. So they keep going further and further into her page and into what she's saying. I saw this girl at the gym, and she was working out, but she had her phone on the floor, or phone on the bench or something like that. And I just had to walk past her to get a dumbbell. And she had she was listening to Candace Owens while she was working out. Like, Candace Owens, her YouTube page was running while she was working out. I'm like, this is a different type of being psychotic, truly. And that's because they're trying to find a reason why what happened to Charlie Kirk. They won't, it's like the five stages of denial or grief or whatever. They're like in this disbelief phase that they're trying to search for why things happened to him. Because they don't want to face their ruach that it's actually a ritual or a psyop. So they're trying to run away from that truth. They're trying to run away from admitting that the conspiracy theorists and the truthers were right. So they jump right into Candace Owens head first and keep trying to go into every rabbit hole. And every rabbit hole that she's sending people on produces nothing. It's profiting nothing, because now she has another rabbit hole. And then now she went all the way around saying, oh, something that Erica Kirk did is the reason why he died. Like, it's insane to me. And then the reason why, again, they go down these rabbit holes, because they're reprobate in mind. And now they have this new doctrine that they're trying to push. And there's a reason why they truly didn't expose Jeffrey Epstein for who he was. And they're never going to expose who Jeffrey Epstein was. They're never going to do that. These people have an oath of secrecy. Why would anybody who's under the oath of Freemasonry tell you who they are and what they've been doing? They're never going to tell you or show you any evidence from off that island. Never. You might as well stop hoping and stop trying to go into every rabbit hole that they keep bringing up. They're never going to tell you what they've been doing with girls in that island. They're never going to tell you. Never going to see the tapes. You're never going to know the connections. They already told you who was there. You need to just rest with the fact that it's politicians and it's people in the government being blackmailed through Israel. That's it. That's all you need to know the entire system is compromised. People so desperately need to know chapter and verse what went on in that island. Like I said before, is what Brother Ron was saying, that people so desperately want to know what Satan's doing. So desperately. Especially when you know already. You don't need any more clarification. It's the fact that they went over there is the clarification. But now they're trying to slice hairs, and then they're trying to make him a pedophile now, because that's what we were saying. We were saying Jeffrey Epstein the pedophile, Jeffrey Epstein the pedophile. Now they're slicing it. Now this is where the psyop comes in. This is where the brainwashing comes in. Now they are making a difference in definition of what truly is a pedophile and what is a hemophile. I have never heard a hemophile in my life, but you now going to hear what a hemophile is.
As for Epstein, I've said this before, but just as a reminder, I do know somebody very, very close to this case who is in a position to know virtually everything. Not everything, but virtually everything. And this person has told me from the start, years and years ago, that Jeffrey Epstein, in this person's view, was not a pedophile. This is this person's view, who was there for a lot of this, but that he was into the barely legal type. Mm-hmm. Like, he liked 15-year-old girls. Mm-hmm. And I realize this is disgusting. I'm definitely not trying to make an excuse for this. I'm just giving you facts. That he wasn't into like 8-year-olds, but he liked the very young teen types that could pass for even younger than they were, but would look legal to a passerby. And that is what I believed, and that was what I reliably was told for many years. And it wasn't until we heard from Pam Bondi that they had tens of thousands of videos of alleged forgive me, they used to call it kiddie porn. Now they call it child sexual abuse material on his computer that for the first time I thought, oh no, he was an actual pedophile. I mean, only a pedophile gets off on young children abuse videos. She's never clarified it. I don't know whether it's true. I have to be honest. I don't really trust Pam Bondi's word on the Epstein matters anymore. Yeah, so I don't know what's true about him, but we have yet to see anybody come forward and say, I was a, like I was under 10. I was under 14 when I first came within his purview. Look, it's, you can say that's a distinction without a difference.
No, it's not.
I think there is a difference. Yeah. There's a difference between a 15-year-old and a 5-year-old. Yeah. You know, it's just whatever.
And that was Megyn Kelly. And she started off with, I know a guy. If these people knew what these people had information based on a prolific human trafficker and blackmailer, they've known this for a while then. It ain't been no couple of years. You don't just make these friendships in a couple of years and then these people admit to you in secrecy what these people are and what they've been doing. So now, like I said before, they're trying to slice hairs of what a pedophile is now. If you are under a certain age, if it's 15, 14, 13, it don't matter. They are minors. They still are minors. There is no clarification. There is no definition that needs to be had. There's no set apart difference. It's still disgusting. So right now, the reason why they're dangling Jeffrey Epstein in front of you because they want to humanize him. They want you to say he was never a pedophile. That's at the end result, is to not to clarify or classify him as a pedophile. That he was just into young girls. So then what do you think that does to men that were online defending it? Oh, so I'm not a pedophile then. I just like young girls. I like barely legal young girls. This is why Jews own the porn industry, where they have a category called barely legal, which is between, well, they're 18, 17, 18, but you got to be 18 to do porn. So it's 18 and they're looking 17, 16, 15. Like she said, if you remember Alan Dershowitz, he was a customer of Jeffrey Epstein as well. And what was he trying to do in like, what, the 80s or 90s? He was trying to push to get the statute of limitations lowered to age 15. This is what they've been working on. The same thing when they were been working on the No Hide laws, they had been working on trying to break the mental conditioning that pedophilia is bad. Never mind that the Talmud and Islam says you can marry somebody under 3 years old, or has sex with them under 3 years old, or marry someone under three, you know, 3 or 9 years old. Why do you think that is? They're trying to get you to learn their rules, their laws, their statutes, their commandments. This is why it's so funny to me when there are Christian Zionists and don't truly know the nature of Zionism. Zionists and most Jews and most Israelis really do not like Christians. How can politicians who be Christians, how can Charlie Kirk, who is a Christian, how can Erica Kirk, a Christian, go over into Israel and do every photo shoot about hugging and touching that wall when Zionism and Israel in itself as an entity dislikes Christians? It makes no sense. You have to be a reprobate to not understand this. And it doesn't matter what religion you are in. You have to be a reprobate to not understand this. That you are worshiping an entity that does not like you. They have to tolerate you because they don't have the numbers to completely move everybody into the system that they want people to be moved in. They need Christianity. They need it. They need Christians validated, and Christians allow themselves to be used this way because they think the New Testament is only about them, because they want so desperately that the Old Testament is done away with so they don't have or serve the guilt of knowing that these laws and statutes and commandments aren't done away with. That's why they lean so heavily on what Paul said and lean so heavily on the laws and the statutes and the commandments were nailed to the cross. They've already been fulfilled. Because if it's been fulfilled and you assume that Zionism is in place of Israel, Yashareel, us, then you can breathe a lot softer. Then you could be in your comfort zone, which is what all religions are. It's comfort zones. Because if everybody else, if a billion people are doing the same thing you're doing, you don't feel discomfort. You feel part of an assembly. You feel part of a community. But when you look at scripture and you understand that the Most High did not pick us because we were many upon the earth. He picked us because we were the few of all people. Before the flood, the Most High picked a few people. I'm talking about 8 people to be left over to build the new world. And when he comes back, he's again going to select a few people. This is the understanding that is escaping people who are in religion's minds. So why would a nation that hates this particular religion want to exalt him before the mark and before the Antichrist? What is the trap here? Well, let me tell you, the trap is to bring every Christian into believing that these are the people of the book so they can enact that Noahide law. So the first two laws is you cannot serve another god, or idol worship is frowned upon, is a no-no in the Noahide laws. But they don't tell you what god you're serving. You think it's the Most High God, but it's Satan. And so you can't worship Jesus Christ. And it's crazy that you would want to be put in the guillotine for a Roman invention with a Greek name that was made based on the allegory of the movement of the sun and the winter solstice and the spring and summer solstices. It is crazy to me that you want to die as a revamped version of Serapis or Mithra. It is crazy to me that the image that you have in your mind of the Most High, of the Son of the Most High God, is a Roman and Greek invention based on a character that was a image of a painter's gay lover. It is crazy to me that this is what you want to be put in the guillotine for. You know how hard the Most High is going to laugh at you when you get to heaven and say, what have you done? And he pours through your mind, and the image that you had that you think is the Son of the Most High is a Grecian man with flowy brown hair, blue eyes, and then he sit there and watch you. You watch yourself. I don't know if the Most High is going to do like a top 10 of ESPN dumbest things you've done in your life, and that be the top one, is to be put in the guillotine for a man that never existed that you call Jesus Christ. And then he look at you, you look at him, and you look at his son, and your son looking at you, and they both shrug their shoulders, be like, oh, you should have learned. And then you go to hell for it. Like, that is wild to me that this is what you want to chance your entire salvation on, this one man that didn't exist. It's going to be wild for a lot of Christians. I'm sorry. It's going to be wild for a lot of you. Wild. Because you would rather not have us be the children of the book, because it comes with some guilt. Because you have never whipped the backs of any Israeli or any Jew. You have never done that. You never hung, lynched any Jew. Other than, you know, Franks. But that's a different story. You have never put bondage slavery upon Jews. You've never done this. A civil war wasn't fought in this country in the 1800s over a Jew. The North versus the South and the civil rights era, it had nothing to do with a Jew. But when you know it's us, then that guilt comes, because you're like, damn, we have actually beaten up, trodden down, and destroyed the children of the Most High. And that guilt fills you. So then you'd be like, okay, I know I must be in trouble with God now, because we have done this to his children. And I said this before, it is not by your power that you've done this. You were just used as a belt. That's it. You was used as a rod. That's it. It ain't nothing to be guilty over. But this is the reason why most Christians do not want it to be us. And they would rather it be Zionism. It'd rather be the nation that hates them. It's crazy. Before I get back to that, I'm gonna show you another jokey joke. And that's what they're doing. They're laughing when talking about pedophilia. If they get you to laugh about the difference between pedophilia and hemophilia, they got you. Because you're absorbing the message and you don't look at it as being disgusting, you look at it as being a joke. And this is a Jewish comedian.
My girlfriend was like, oh no, we cannot listen to R. Kelly. R. Kelly is a pedophile. And now here's the thing, and just hear me out for 1 second. Technically speaking, R. Kelly is not a pedophile. Just give me 1 second. I promise this goes well. Just hear me out. The term pedophile refers to people who are attracted to those that are prepubescent. Then there's something called a hebephile. That's people who are attracted to those in the early stages of puberty, like 11, 12, 13, 14. And then there's something called an ephebophile. That's people who are attracted to those in the later stages of puberty, like 15, 16, 17, 18. But I think the reason we don't make those distinctions is because it's very hard to explain the difference without sounding like a pedophile.
I didn't laugh. That's the punchline. But it's funny for them. It's supposed to be funny. Their young children are groomed. Some of them raped. Well, most of them raped. Incest, molestation. It's supposed to be funny as a joke. It's not to be taken serious. And that's what they're doing. People think that evil is just going to show up in its own name. And most times, evil does not. Evil is not going to show up with red horns, a pointy tail, flames, fire, darkness, and speaking in a very groggy voice. Evil is not going to show up as evil. Evil shows up in the things you love, the things you laugh about, and the things that you find comfort in. That is how evil shows up. It's like Christians, anytime they see something they believe is demonic, they come online, oh, that was demonic. Oh, this is demonic. I won't watch this because it's demonic. And then they'll turn around and do Christmas. They'll turn around and do Thanksgiving. They turn around and do Easter. Because they don't think things that are of value and the things that are tradition and the things that everybody does is demonic. They see things as flesh, as their eyes see and say, oh, this is demonic because it has red, it has darkness, it has dark, ominous tones, as a dark soundtrack, as dark music. The coloring or the filter used to show me these images is dark. They think that's demonic. So, like I said, you have to be a reprobate. And I'm going to run down what reprobate means in scripture before I head out of here. Enoch 10. All the earth has been corrupted by the effects of the teaching of Azazel. To him, therefore, ascribe the whole crime. To Gabriel, also Yahuwah said, go to the bastards, to the reprobates, to the children of fornication, and destroy the children of fornication, the offspring of the watchers, from among men, bring them forth, and excite them one against another. Let them perish by mutual slaughter, for length of days shall not be theirs. So you could think that all the children that people have been having out of wedlock, who are not covered by Yahushua, who have not sought repentance by the Most High Yah, that they are the bastards, the reprobates, the children of fornication. And the Most High is going to do exactly what he did to the watchers' children. He's going to excite men against themselves. It's mentioned in Ezra and Baruch. He's going to excite their ruach against themselves. The spirit of the stupor shall enseize the inhabitants of earth. A state of unconsciousness. 2 Corinthians 13, examine yourselves, whether ye be in the faith, prove your own selves. Know ye not your own selves, how that Yahushua HaMashiach is in you, except ye be reprobates? So people know that the real rock is not them. That's why they have to go to church, jumping and falling all over the ground, trying to pretend that Yahushua is this particular ruach, that Yahuwah is this particular ruach that gets you to jump up and down, screaming and yelling and doing that little huckabuck dance that they've been doing. But I trust that ye shall know that we are not reprobates. I'll skip down to verse 8. For we can do nothing against the truth, but for the truth. Romans 1. And even, Romans 1:28, and even as they did not like to retain Elohim in their knowledge, Elohim gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of Elohim, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of Elohim, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. Isn't that your boy Charlie Kirk, loving to debate? Deceitful? Is he not? I should have used that one every time they keep bringing his name up. But people are like, oh, he's just speaking his words. He's just speaking. He's just using words. And all he's doing is going from campus to campus without a degree in his back pocket, but going on campus to campus to debate. Titus 1, 13 through 16. This witness is true. Wherefore, rebuke them sharply, that they may be sound in the faith, not giving heed to Yehudic fables and commandments of men that turn from the truth. Unto the pure, all things are pure, but unto those who are defiled and unbelieving is nothing pure. But even their mind and conscience is defiled. They profess that they know Elohim. They profess that they know God, but in works they deny him. But in works, they deny him, being abominable and disobedient, and unto every good work reprobate. So don't give me this, oh, we can't do the commandments in the feast days because we're not in our land. You're proving yourself to be reprobate, and you are supposed to be the children of the Most High Yah, his inheritance, his apple of his eye, his fervent lover. So if it's the same with us when we were afflicted and punished and chosen to be enemies for a time of the Most High Yah, what do you think the rest of the world is going to have to endure and not really have to go through any captivity? He's not going to take the patience to put you in and out of captivity to get this point. You're just going to be destroyed for not living this truth because you can't do nothing against the truth.